And so it is the recorder of man's deeds, the keeper of his conscience, the courier of his news, that we look for strength and assistance, confident that with your help, man will be what he was born to be, free and independent.
We do not choose to be ruled. We elect to be governed.
In your heart, you know he's right.
Romans, countrymen, lend me your ears. I come to bring you liberty, not destroy it. Evil the government's duel is after them. The good is often turned with their bones. So let it be with liberty in exile. Hello and welcome to the program. I'm your host, Daniel Ososki, reporting to you from Die Freiheit Studio in Vienna, Austria, in the United States of Europe, on this, the 14th day of March 2011. Our website, as always, is libertyinexile.com. That is libertyinexile.com. There, of course, you'll find the Twitter feed, the links, the videos, articles, and more, and it's all offered to you free of charge. Now, we've been away from the airwaves for a great while, but we have much to cover. Many subjects, things that have come into permission, come into view, and that is all we shall start. Now, in usual fashion, we shall be covering the police state here in Europe, across the United States of America, across the rest of the world. We'll also be looking at climate disruption function, those believers in anthropogenic climate change that are pushing large steps to give us carbon taxes and the like. But I think there's one thing that I'd like to cover here that normally I don't tend to push on, and it has to do with vaccinations. It has to do with vaccinations, and it has to do with the corporations that push these vaccinations. Now, I believe the biggest study that came out in the last few weeks was that of, actually, we don't know where it came from exactly, but it was reported in ABC News heavily. And the headline here, of course, the links are on libertyinexile.com. The link here is, half of adult men now have HPV. Now, this is apparently from some study. We don't really know who put out this study, where it's coming from, but that's the news study. And every time in the news that there is a study that comes out, there's always a new remedy that is pushed immediately afterwards. This is really not hard to see. It happens every single time there's any sort of study. They have the fix, problem, reaction, solution. That is how it works. And I think the greatest example of how this is being pushed by corporations especially is that they use scientists on their own payroll to kind of use their own scientific credentials, give them grant money, and then they can sell these vaccines. Now, the greatest example, of course, is on NPR. And NPR, of course, is the feel-good liberal station of the day. And, I mean, there are other news about NPR having to do with the little sting operation by James O'Keefe. We'll talk about that later in the program. But for now, we're looking at vaccines, and they bring on a couple of scientists. They bring on these official-sounding ladies who are researchers at this university, and they've been doing research for HPV and these vaccines and everything, and you can tell that these are straight-line scientists, because scientists never lie. Science is a 100% proven fact dilemma where human motivations and actions play no key. Apparently, this is coming from NPR.
Dr. Maura Gillison is a professor and the Jed Coughlin Chair of Cancer Research at The Ohio State University in Columbus. Thanks for talking with us today, Dr. Gillison.
Good afternoon. Thanks for having me on the show.
You're welcome. Anna Giuliano is program leader in cancer epidemiology at the H. Lee Moffitt Cancer Center and Research Institute in Tampa, Florida. We should point out that Dr. Giuliano has received grant money from the Merck Pharmaceutical Company to study HPV, and Merck, of course, makes the HPV vaccine Gardasil.
Okay, so basically this is the preface to the interview with these official-sounding ladies. These are scientists. They work at universities. Of course, they're very principled in their research, and they're doing everything they can to provide us with the answers that shall prevent this disease in the future. Or they're on the payroll of a huge corporation that's actually pushing the vaccines. Now, it has to be sort of pondered over. Why are vaccines such a profitable industry? Why are so many vaccines coming out every single year and being pushed upon the general population? And I think the greatest example of this, and this is one of the first subjects that we covered here on Liberty in Exile, all the way back in at the very end of 2009, beginning of 2010, was H1N1, this apparent danger that was taking over the world, where only 2,000 people out of the entire world died as a result of this flu, which was leagues weaker than the actual seasonal flu. But this vaccine was pushed. It was pushed by these huge corporations, and we covered this. It was reported in the Daily Mail. We had the articles all up. We've talked all about it. These corporations have been pushing these vaccines as a way to make more money. It's a way to push these out to where people aren't even sick. They're healthy people, and you give them the remedy to a problem they don't even have yet. Now, I'm not anti-vaccinations at all. Vaccines are very important, and basically because of vaccinations, we've allowed the populace to grow as big as it is now. Now, we're able to live to be 100, 115 because of vaccinations. But one thing that's always important to look at here is the motivations that people have and the breakthroughs that people use science to promote. Science is always a good thing, believe me, right? It used to be in the 20s and 30s, eugenics was a great branch of science. You had entire universities that were talking about eugenics and how it's an actual science and how each race is better than the other. This was promoted science in research. Now, where's the scientific consensus on that? But let us continue with Science Friday here on NPR.
And so what is the take-home message for everybody listening to this saying, what do I do? What should I do? How do I protect myself? How should I be careful? I'll ask both of you, Dr. Gillison and Dr. Giuliano.
Okay, so you can just imagine what's going on right now for both of these apparent scientists, these ladies sitting in the universities who are also being paid by Merck, who is, you know, the largest corporation that makes these vaccines. You know, they're sitting in their little office there. They have a Merck poster on the wall. You have a Merck corporate representative standing by making sure she does not screw up. So what is the message they have to put? Vaccines, vaccines, vaccines. Get vaccinated. We need to sell these vaccines. That's what they need to push. Let's hear what these scientist ladies have to say.
After you, Anna.
Okay.
Nervous laughter.
Well, I think it's really important to reiterate what Dr. Gillison has just said about screening. We have had very effective cancer screening programs for the prevention of cervical cancer. So we know that screening can work when we have something available to screen. The problem that we have
vaccines.
For the cancers that are affecting men that are caused by HPV is that we do not have a screening method that we can offer.
Vaccines.
So we can't prevent those cancers via screening the way we have so effectively
vaccines.
With cervical cancer. So that leaves us with essentially primary prevention, which is how can we prevent infection with HPV?
Oh, vaccines.
Now, you touched on one method, which is condom use. And as Dr. Gillison said, it's imperfect. We've published and others have published
vaccines.
That you get partial protection from condoms. But condom use is important for a variety of reasons. So it's something that we would still strongly promote. The other is where there is evidence that male circumcision can reduce HPV infection, both in the male as well as transmission to the female partner.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then the third is, you know, the classic primary prevention
classic.
Through vaccination. And we now have in the United States a licensed vaccine against HPV that is available for both males and females.
Oh, we have a new vaccine that's actually conveniently provided by the people who are paying me. See, this is the problem with A, media, B, science today. It's about advocacy and it's about money. And people are not asking questions at all. Now, they do clarify it, of course, in the reports, but to the people who basically are falling asleep at the wheel listening to NPR, it just goes in one ear and goes right out the other. What is that little, come on, let's hear that little preface there. Can you tell us, what's that disclaimer? Tell us about that Ira Flatow.
I should point out that Dr. Giuliano has received grant money from the Merck Pharmaceutical Company to study HPV, and Merck, of course, makes the HPV vaccine Gardasil.
Again?
Of course, makes the HPV vaccine Gardasil.
Again?
Of course, makes the HPV vaccine Gardasil.
What?
I have received funding from Merck.
What?
I have received funding from Merck.
Huh?
Of course, makes the HPV vaccine Gardasil.
Okay, so here we are again. This is it. Why do you think that people have a skeptical view of science when they know it has been corrupted by these huge corporations that have the money and are trying to get their way? It's never a joke. Never a joke. When we're talking about millions of people and giving them these vaccines, which not all the time, but many times have not been thoroughly tested, and basically they're only being used as a way to, well, it's make work, right? It's the worst of every bureaucracy, and now it's come to the vaccine industry. And these huge corporations that give these grants to scientists to do these things where basically they're injecting people who don't really need it. Now, I think this study is definitely bogus. There's some fudging of the numbers here, and I simply cannot trust these scientists who are pummeled and pushed by these corporations. The same thing that's happened with Pfizer and all of these pharmaceutical industries. This right now is one of the most important issues in the country today. Now, there's a documentary which came out not long ago called The Marketing of Madness. I recommend that to anybody who's listening here on the program. I've put the trailer up on the website before, and this is just talking about the entire industry that is trying to convince every single person that they are sick, are going to be sick, need all these medications, need vaccines and antibiotics and antipsychotics and all these different types of drugs. And we've actually reported on the show that they've given these things to dogs. That is what is dangerous in science today. And that is why we need more critical analysis of what's going on in our science fields, what's going on in the media. Because listening to this NPR report, you would take it all as fact. And what is their number one recommendation? Get the vaccine. That is it. There we are. That's your National Treasure NPR. National HPV Radio. Now that serves as a perfect segue to this next topic that has been, again, a consistent theme on this show. And it has to do with what used to be called global warming, which was then changed to climate change, which was then changed to climate disruption function. Now, the official name has been changed because it is a changing face. And as we all know, this is what is going on right now, apparently, right? And it's all about being skeptical and looking at the science and making sure that beyond reasonable doubt, things can be proved. Now, this is not a position that is anti-science, as some claim, but what we like to do here at this show is comb through the popular culture and see how this message is being propagated. Seeing what the rationale is, the reasoning, why things happen, how things happen, and what the remedy is. That's what's always most important to look at, the remedy. The second that I read Bloomberg News, that Goldman Sachs, JP Morgan, and all these banks were in on the deal. They were the ones starting and basically sponsoring this entire market of climate carbon credits. That's the day that I became skeptical. Now, what is this entire carbon trading thing that I'm talking to you about now? Basically, the idea is cap and trade. Every certain business has a certain amount of CO2, carbon dioxide, thing that we exhale. They have a certain amount that they are allowed to produce, say a credit of 900 pounds or whatever it may be, whatever it is measured in, I believe it'd be volume in that case. So they have 900 that they are allowed to produce. Well, say you have a clothing company which does not has a limit of 900, but it only produces 50. So it will trade its remaining 850 on an open market, where bigger corporations will then trade, making that a commodity. This is the only thing that's been proposed by those that are pushing this theme of anthropogenic global warming. If it's about changing our habits, doing things like that, I am all for it. Who would not be? More recycling. Greener products, I'm all for it. Alternative energy, these are good things that do help. But if we're talking about trading this stuff on the open market, that is something a little different. And if you think differently, if you are skeptical, then people, of course, will be looking down at you. Like our own Prince Charles of the United Kingdom, who believes you are a fool to reject this theory of anthropogenic global climate change.
Now, I have to say, this process has not exactly been helped by the corrosive effect on public opinion of those climate change skeptics who deny the vast body of scientific evidence.
The vast body.
That shows, beyond any reasonable doubt,
beyond a reasonable
that global warming has been exacerbated by human industrialized activity.
Says the Prince.
Their suggestion that hundreds of scientists around the world and those who accept their dispassionate evidence, including, presumably, ladies and gentlemen, myself,
who, rather
ironically, am constantly accused of being anti-science, are somehow unconsciously biased, creates the implication that many of us are somehow secretly conspiring to undermine and deliberately destroy the entire market-based capitalist system which now dominates the world. So I would ask how these people are going to face their grandchildren.
Their prince.
And admit to them that they actually failed their future.
Royal Bobby.
That they ignored all the clear warning signs by passing them off as merely part of a cyclical process.
Cyclical
that
process.
That had happened many times before.
Many times.
And was beyond our control. That they had refused to heed the desperate cries of those last remaining traditional societies throughout the world who warned consistently of catastrophe because they could read the signs of impending disintegration.
Impending doom.
In the ever more violent, extreme aberrations in the normally harmonious patterns of nature. So I wonder. Will such people be held accountable at the end of the day for the absolute refusal to countenance a precautionary approach? For this plays, I would suggest, a most reckless game of roulette with the future inheritance of those who come after us.
No, this is the future inheritance of our country and the people in England and around the world who are skeptical of this view of science, anthropogenic global warming, and all that must occur. And people don't understand that if you refuse to believe what we're telling you, that scientists, those in power, then you're just stupid. Basically, what we're trying to say in resume is, shut up, slaves! Now that's the message being pushed by the UK Prince Charles, who is on the stand and he's talking about these global warming skeptics who refuse to basically admit to the vicariousness of the vast body of science. Now, this is completely ridiculous every time they say this. They assume, of course, that there's this vast body of science which proves beyond a reasonable doubt 100% that human activity is to blame for the warming and the cooling and the entire atmosphere, even though the Earth has been here for 9 billion years and that is something we cannot control. And that's the mantra that's put out. Can you say that we've affected it somewhat? Perhaps. But the Earth is much stronger than we. And for us to assume that we can have that power, perhaps, shows a little bit of hubris. And this has been placed into the culture many times. And now the entire idea of climate change is changing. It's in the entire idea of what used to be the simple idea that the Earth is getting a lot hotter and it's because of us is now changing. Of course, we have an article here from USA Today talking about the snowstorms. And of course, you think it's getting colder outside? Well, it's because of warming, too. What caused the colossal snowfalls that buried much of the U.S. this winter, setting snow records in New York City and Chicago? One group of scientists say there's a link to global warming. Counterintuitive though it may be, heavy snowstorms are not inconsistent with a warming planet, says Jeff Masters, director of meteorology for the Weather Underground, a private weather service. I believe the Weather Underground was also a terrorist group in the 1960s, but hey, that's another thing. The announcement was made at a news conference on Tuesday in Washington, D.C. by the Union of Concerned Scientists, a non-profit environmental group. It was not published in a peer-reviewed study in an academic journal. Now, I would be fine with believing that snowstorms are caused by global warming, except that the past and things that they've been telling us leads to the complete opposite conclusion. This is an article from The Independent, the 20th of March in the year 2000. Britain's winter ends tomorrow with a further indications of a striking environmental change. Snow is starting to disappear from our lives. Sledges, snowmen, snowballs, and the excitement of waking up to find that the stuff has settled outside are all a rapidly diminishing part of Britain's culture, as warmer winters, which scientists are attributing to global climate change, produce not only fewer white Christmases, but fewer white Januaries and Februaries. The first 2 months of 2000 were virtually free of significant snowfall in much of lowland Britain, and December brought only moderate snowfall in the southeast. It is the continuation of a trend that has been increasingly visible in the past 15 years. In the south of England, for instance, from 1970 to 1995, snow and sleet fell for an average of 3.7 days, while from 1988 to 1995, the average was 0.7 days. London's last substantial snowfall was in February 1991. Now, looking at this article today, we know that London has been hit with more snow in the past 2 years than they have almost in the last recorded 50. But okay, let's continue with the article. Global warming, the heating of the atmosphere by increased amounts of industrial gases, is now accepted as a reality by the international community. There we are, it's being planted there in the articles in the year 2000. Average temperatures in Britain were nearly 0.6 degrees higher in the 90s than in 1960 to 1990, and it is estimated that they will increase by 0.2 every decade over the coming century, 8 of the 10 hottest years on record occurred in the 90s. However, the warming is so far manifesting itself more in winters, which are less cold than in much hotter summers. According to Dr. David Wiener, a senior research scientist at the Climatic Research Unit at the University of East Anglia, within a few years, winter snowfall will become a rare and exciting event. Quote, "Children just aren't going to know what snow is," he said. The effects of snow-free winter in Britain are already becoming apparent. This year, for the first time ever, Hamleys, Britain's biggest toy shop, had no sledges on display in its Regent Street store. It was a bit of a first, a spokesman said. Fen skating, once a popular sport on the fields of East Anglia, now takes place on an indoor, artificial rink. Malcolm Robinson of the Fenland Indoor Speed Skating Club in Peterborough says that they have not skated outside since 1997. As a boy, I can remember being on ice most winters. Now it's few and far between, he said. Michael Geacock, a Cambridgeshire local historian, added that a generation was growing up without experiencing one of the greatest joys and privileges of living in this part of the world, open-air skating. Warmer winters have had significant environmental and economic implications, and a wide range of research indicates that pests and plant diseases, usually killed by sharp frost, are likely to flourish. But very little research has been done on the cultural implications of climate change, into the possibility, for example, that our notion of Christmas might have to shift. Now, I'm not going to read the rest of the article, but of course I shall link it in libertyinexile.com, and this just shows you exactly what has been going on through our media. They plant these things to pug at the heartstrings. That's all that it's about. It's not about the science, it's about opinion. Now notice the Climatic Research Unit of the University of East Anglia. This has to do with the whole ClimateGate scandal where you had the leaked emails of the scientist basically manipulating the data to make it seem as if more warming had occurred when in fact warming has gone down. Now, I'm not here to dispute the science in that fact. I'm just here to argue for the political implications of that. Now, I have many more articles on this, but I think one of the most interesting that came out in the last few weeks has to do with NASA and nuclear war. Oh my goodness. This one is a good one. I'm sure you guys were reading this. This is from the Huffington Post. Nuclear war is a bad thing, right? Scientists from NASA and a number of other institutions have recently been modeling the effects of a war involving 100 Hiroshima-level bombs, or 0.03% of the world's current nuclear arsenal, according to National Geographic. The research suggests 5 million metric tons of black carbon would be swept into the lowest portion of the atmosphere. The results, according to NASA climate models, could actually be global cooling. In NASA climate models, this carbon then absorbs solar heat and, like a hot air balloon, quickly lofted even higher, where the soot would take much longer to clear from the sky. So here we are, they're talking about basically using nuclear weapons in order to reverse global warming, because, hey, if we're all destroyed in a nuclear blast, at least the Earth will be just that much cooler. Now, these types of articles and the continued videos, the continued push by these celebrities to say to stop eating meat, stop having babies, stop driving cars, that is why I'm skeptical, and that is why it shall. Now, I'm your host, Jael Ososki. This is Liberty in Exile. We'll be right back after this song. That was the Avett Brothers' One Line Wonder. Now, listening to that last clip, of course, we had Prince Charles going off and speaking to the skeptics, and I thought it'd be fitting to play another video about, well, Actually, another clip about what the EPA itself is doing. Now, the EPA, of course, is in the United States, the Environmental Protection Agency. These are the ones who are keeping you safe. Keeping you safe from such menaces such as dust.
Mr. Speaker, houses were shut tight and cloth wedged around doors and windows. But the dust came in so thinly that it could not be seen in the air, and it settled like pollen on the chairs and tables and on the dishes. Ma and Pa Joe did everything they could to save their farm from slipping away into the dust bowl, but ultimately they lost to a force far greater than any effort they could muster. Mr. Speaker, though this is just one line ripped from the pages of the Grapes of Wrath, farmers and ranchers today are facing a modern-day dust storm, the wrath of the EPA. Just when you think you've heard it all, bureaucrats in Washington, D.C. come up with some harebrained idea that leaves you scratching your head in wonderment. The Environmental Protection Agency has apparently run out of things to regulate and tax, so they are considering new guidelines for regulating particulate matter emissions, more commonly known to you and me as dust. Now, I know what you are thinking. This just cannot be true. What kind of crazy scheme is this? Well, the EPA dust police would specifically regulate farm dust. Farmers would be required to have dust collectors on their harvesters, planters, combines, and haying equipment. But my personal favorite is the crackdown on dust created from driving a pickup truck down a dirt or gravel road. I'm not making this up. The federal government is considering farm dust regulations that are caused from driving on a dirt road. So I thought, well, maybe this is just some backdoor attempt to rid America of our majestic four-wheel drive pickups that liberals loathe so much and find some way to force these battery-operated toy cars on the rest of us. But the new proposals don't just apply to dust created from driving. No, they are fair and they are balanced in their overreaching authority. Farmers and ranchers are going to have to somehow limit the dust created by livestock on their property as well. So, say Bessie the cow kicks up too much dust running over to your pickup truck at feeding time. The EPA is going to fine you for Bessie's misconduct. You need to move your cattle to another pasture during the daytime? Well, don't do it on a dry day because they may kick up too much dust. The dust police solution is to manage dusty dirt roads with water, or get this, pave them with asphalt. Now, this is another can of worms. Every farmer and rancher will have the water police raining down on them by the time the first drop hits the dirt. I would think the EPA would be aware of the fact that we already have a shortage of water on ranches and farmers in our country. But make no matter to them, they still want you to control it. And what about this paving the asphalt over these roads? Really, they can't be serious. Aside from the sheer magnitude of this undertaking, the idea is completely unfeasible and it costs prohibitive. The absurdity of these types of federal regulations is what makes normal Americans all across our country frustrated with Washington, D.C.
Now, that one I had to do for the lulz. That was too amusing to me. But there we are, EPA attempting to regulate dust all over the farms. There we are. Now, we've been a little heavily here on the environmental and health issues. We've talked about NPR. We talked about vaccines, Gardasil, HPV and the like. But of course, as everyone knows, there's plenty of other things going on in the news. We have basically the intervention in Libya, which apparently they're trying to start. And the United States is always saying the same thing. They are saying, we will not go alone. We will not go alone, which is exactly the same thing they said in Iraq. What happened there? We had a coalition. And of course, the United States pays most of the price. Now, there are interesting articles having to do with Libya, of course, and as always, I've kind of labeled this Operation Enduring Libyan Oil, because as we know, in Libya, the only reason that anyone is talking at all about this place is because there is way too much oil. Now, that's really all it's about, and if you watch any alternative news, you kind of see that it's kind of a joke what's going on right now in Libya. People are not revolting as they were in Egypt. It's not the same thing at all. If anything, this is being orchestrated. This is a media manipulation, and I'm calling this here. It is a media manipulation. And if you watch the movie Wag the Dog, if you see the types of things that people in government sometimes do in order to try to, I guess, get the people on their side, get them convinced, this is exactly what goes on. This is all that the CIA and all of these intelligence organizations are there to do. That's mostly their entire purpose, trying to get the public on their side. You know, that ambivalent public there that Prince Charles was talking about earlier. See, what he's talking about there is trying to get everyone else on their side, trying to make them understand. And there's an article here in The Independent about how America is funneling guns to the rebels, and I have a clip of Hillary Clinton going to meet the rebels. You know, I'm almost tired of this. We've seen this way too many times before. We're arming rebels in countries in order to gain and basically strategic interests. It has to do with oil. It has nothing to do with the struggle of the people. People are struggling all over the world. Why is it that we're concentrating on Libya? So for those that are skeptical of any type of intervention, you'll see that this intervention by the United States government, by any international actor at this point, would only be to further the goals and ambitions of the oil companies. That's all that can be said. We know that's why Britain is so happy to do it. BP, British Petroleum, they want that grip on that oil. I have a few articles that you can check out on libertyinexile.com. Some things are kind of interesting. Of course, most people who are very intelligent and are very critical are seeing through the veil of this and seeing that it's really just a manipulation, and it shouldn't go any farther. And I have some other clips to play, but I think you get the point here. And I think for those of you who have skeptical minds, you'll start to understand what's really going on. When you don't see a single video of groups manifesting and all you see are rebels shooting weapons, this is the same stock footage they use for Al-Qaeda, and I have no doubt it's the same stock footage they're using here for the rebels. How many times have we heard of the government telling us that intervention is necessary? Killing innocent human beings is never necessary. Now let's get away from that subject a little bit. Another thing that's in the news, of course, and actually has ended recently, had to do with the union protest in Wisconsin. Now, this is, of course, very important for the national dialogue, understand what's going on there. And, of course, the progressive wing, that is those who do support the unions, pitted this as the workers against the bosses, against the big, huge corporations that want to strip their power and all. What, of course, that has been framed wrongly. And really what we have is a group of public sector workers who basically have their salary thanks to everyone else and are working for the government, basically reacting to the new law changes, which would basically curtail their supposed rights to collectively bargain and strip them of their health care salary and the like. Now, there are a few things to understand in this story, and I've talked about this, I've written about it, and you know, there's been many commentaries and everyone's talking about it, but this is when those in the unions need to understand that it's not just about clamping down on the workers. It's the same problem that you have with education, where any attack on teachers' unions is somehow seen as an attack on education as a whole. That's not at all what it's about. It's about attacking the entire thing that is draining that. So teachers' unions are one cause of why education is worse off than it was 50 years ago. Unions are one reason why public sector workers now are paid so heavily compared to the private sector. Now, I'm not for stripping any rights. Of course, who would be? If they ask people in these surveys and these polls, oh, are you for stripping people of their rights? That's not what it's about. People do have the right, of course, to collectively bargain, to collectively assemble. No problem with that at all. But when you're a public sector worker and who you're trying to negotiate with is the government, the taxpayers, there are limits that need to be in play. And that's why these collective bargaining measures are not in place in most states. Most state unions don't even exist, first off. And for those that do exist, a lot of them are not allowed to collectively bargain for everything, including health insurance and the like, and pensions. And the only thing that Scott Walker was taking away, really, was their right to collectively bargain over health care and pension. Everything else was being left intact. And there's so much more to get out of this, but I think what I like to provide the analysis for a little bit more is the media reaction and to what people on Daily Kos, Democracy Now!, Huffington Post, what these people are saying. I mean, I think it's always interesting to listen to the opposing arguments. It's one of the most important virtues of a free and democratic society, that I understand. And you have to kind of see what these people are saying and the mantra that they're throwing out and their understanding of how the world works. Here's Michael Moore on his own little taking of basically how rich this country really is.
To me, the solution is quite simple. First of all, we're not broke. This country is not broke. State of Wisconsin is not broke. There's a ton of cash in this country, trillions of dollars of it. But it's a finite amount. There is only so much cash. All right? What's happened is that we've allowed a vast majority of that cash to be concentrated in the hands of just a few people. And they're not circulating that cash. If you don't believe that, go try and get a loan right now. They're sitting on the money. They're using it for their own stuff. They're putting it someplace else. They have no interest in helping you with your life, with that money. We've allowed them to take that. That's not theirs. That's a national resource. That's ours. That we all have this. We all benefit from this, or we all suffer as a result of not having it. And I think that we need to go back to taxing these people at the proper rates. We need to see these jobs as something that we own, that we collectively own as Americans. And you just can't steal our jobs and take them someplace else.
Now, what Michael Moore is referring to, of course, and some points I might have to agree with, and that's, of course, that the federal government has given billions of dollars to these banks and these corporations and these bailouts, supposed bailouts, which were needed, of course, but they were championed by the big Democratic leaders at the time, so I don't know why he doesn't put that much emphasis on that, but if you see his movie Capitalism, A Love Story, you see some great points. And I made a comment about this in an article on Liberty in Exile talking about the lobbyists in Washington and in the financial industry. It's a great documentary. It documents very well what goes on, but the way that he manipulates it in his own way is that we need more government and we need more influence and we need basically, we need more Democrats in there to change it all up, and they're the ones who are going to save us, when in fact, you have to change the entire system. It's not just about putting one guy in there who'll be favorable. You have to deconstruct it all. But one thing that he does use is this archaic economic vision, where basically this whole change, this entire new wave of no more industrialization of all this is ultimately a terrible thing, and we want those jobs back. This type of thinking is dangerous. These are the types of people that unionists, those who basically control most of these unions, they have this idea of thinking that you can just recreate these factories, and you can just recreate jobs like that. When in fact, they've never truly read economics, and they don't understand what progression is. Why we don't have industrialization in this country anymore is not 100% based upon the fact that all the jobs are gone. One, it's that we, as Americans, are now using technology, we're using data, we're using the digital element to spread our own wealth. It's not anymore about Joe Blow in Michigan assembling a toy. It's about Mr. Frocklock in California who's come up with the idea for a new toy. And this goes very deep, and there's a certain point that I would agree with. A lot of the times, a lot of these corporations will go to China, they find the cheap labor, and basically exploit the workers as much as they can. That I definitely do agree with. That's one point that I believe Michael Moore and I would be in the same boat over. But the reason this has happened, of course, is free trade agreements. These pieces of paper which sign away sovereignty and basically give these corporations the incentive to leave. And why do they have the incentive to leave? Well, wages here, too high. Wages in China, very low. Regulations here, very high. China, very low. And there's other things that you can cover, and there are many angles you can take on this Wisconsin story and unions in general, and this is an ongoing conversation and debate. I remember arguing with Carl Knox, my fellow host at CGLO just a few months ago about this same thing, about unions and the like. And there's a couple of things that you could look at, and a lot of people are very interested in this and continuing this, and we shall see what happens. Government is broke right now, and unlike Michael Moore's words, it is the government that is broke. The people are rich, of course, but it is the government, those people that have apparently been elected to rule over the people, that have run amok with the money. Now, a couple other things I'd like to get to, and we'll do a little bit more comedy here. We had the homeland Islamic, sort of this Islamophobia that's been going around a lot, and it's tied to these supposed terror plots that go on all over the United States and all over the world, and you need to be scared, and anyone who's wearing any sort of Muslim garb is out to kill you. Now, is there truth that 9/11, this attack, this happened, and at the root of it was this sort of Islamic jihadism? Yes, true. What was it incited by? Well, of course, that is the American presence in the Middle East and the bases in Saudi Arabia, the Holy Land. But, of course, that's a grievance that nobody in the media really likes to talk about. But you had Congressman Peter King from New York, who gave this amazing little... he had a congressional testimony and had this entire commission, and they're out, they're questioning people about this homeland terror of these homegrown Islamic terrorists and all. And basically what this was a sideshow of a field day. And I think the best analysis of it, of course, comes from our own Comedy Central's Jon Stewart.
But Peter King has long believed that Muslims should be held to a higher standard.
The imam himself, who poses as a moderate, yet he was saying after 9/11 that the U.S. may have brought on the attack itself. He also refused to say whether Hamas is a terrorist organization. And as a result of that, I believe there should be a full investigation of the funding and of the imam himself.
So it's really more than just people aren't helping. Peter King believes that people should be investigated by the government for failing to denounce terrorist organizations, even ones with mainly regional ambitions. Hey, I wonder if there's anyone else Peter King thinks we should investigate, who in the past has shown sympathies for these types of groups.
Peter King in the past has had ties in Ireland to the IRA and Sinn Féin.
The IRA! Dun, dun, dun. Wait, the individual retirement account people or the car bomb innocent bystanders, political terror people? I'm being told both. He has a fine retirement plan, but also the association with terrorists. King, who a Northern Irish judge once called an obvious collaborator with the IRA, often spoke at events held by NORAID, a New York group accused of sending the IRA guns and money, and went on TV and said things like this.
I will say tonight what I've said for the past 25 years, that the moral standing of the IRA is equal to that of the British Army.
Wow. Wait until Congressman Peter King gets a hold of terrorist sympathizer Peter King. That's going to be a storm.
Now, of course, that was a hilarious take by Jon Stewart on Peter King's little homegrown terror trials. And, of course, as we've covered on this program, every single instance of any type of this quote-unquote homegrown terror has turned out to be a manipulation, a lie, a fabrication, used only to scare the populace and implement changes that have now turned our society into somewhat of a police state. And one of the, I guess, greatest example that we can put out was going to trial here just recently in Detroit. Roll the clip, please.
Today's scare comes as the man known as the underwear bomber appears in federal court in Detroit. Umar Farouk Abdulmutallab is accused of trying to blow up a plane over Detroit on Christmas Day 2009. Fox News' Amy Lang has more from outside federal court, where a trial date has now been set. Amy.
Yes, a trial date has been set, but it was actually more interesting to hear from a couple of the passengers who showed up here at court today, who have a very interesting theory about what really happened.
The U.S. government escorted him through security without a passport, and we believe gave him an intentionally defective bomb.
It's a startling allegation from two local attorneys who were on board the 2009 Christmas Day flight to Detroit when Umar Farouk Abdulmutallab tried to blow up a bomb hidden in his underwear. Kurt and Lori Haskell think the U.S. government was behind the whole thing.
It was intentional, then. It went this far to further the war on terror, to get body scanners in the airports, to increase the TSA's budget, to renew the Patriot Act, and whatever other reasons you want to list.
The Haskell say in Amsterdam, before boarding the flight to Detroit, they witnessed Abdulmutallab arguing with a ticket agent at the gate because he didn't have a passport, when a man in a tan suit with an American accent intervened.
The ticket agent did not want to allow Mutallab on the flight, and this man was very insistent of it. And then she referred them to a manager down the hallway.
They next saw Abdulmutallab on board the plane when they saw fire and people screaming. Abdulmutallab has insisted on representing himself in this case. The trial date's now been set for October 4th and could include up to 400 witnesses.
I rest my case. And there we are, left with yet another example of those in power using events and information to manipulate and scare the working populace. On this 14th of March, 2011 broadcast, Liberty in Exile, we have covered the continued collusion between big business and big government, the manipulation of science for the purpose of profit, the ridiculous aims of the busybody government, the elite's disdain of popular democracy and opinion, the flawed economic visions of media personalities, the scaremongering and ignorant biases of public officials, and much more. The important message to care forth, however, is that understanding the world around you is the first key to unlocking its majestic mysteries. When we deconstruct the events and occurrences which seem so random in our lives, only then will we fully prosper to the potential that is our fortune. Stay conscious and stay critical. This is Yael Osowski. Thank you for listening to Liberty in Exile. Please check out libertyinexile.com for articles, analysis, and media assassination. Au revoir et bonne chance à tous.